This is the home of the Grit Grinder.
I'm a professional grinder.
Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050. Making your drive home a lot more fun.
Hour 2 Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Live from the Jack Astors on John Street. Ahead of the home opener tonight, Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star will join us around the table in about 30 minutes. We've got an opening night set of prop bets we got to hit on tonight. We're jacked up. Marcus Stroman on the mound. He wrote a really interesting piece in the Players Tribune. Every athlete alive is on the Players Tribune. Like anyone of substance, anyone that people would find interesting.
Yeah.
Jeter calls him up and says, hey, I'm going to get you to write for my website. Like, it's incredible what's going on with this website.
And it's not even them writing. It's a ghostwriter, right? Like, it's them talking.
I was just going to say, Jamie, these guys, like, my grammar is grade 10 level, and if you ask me to put a thing in the Tribune, it's a grade 7 could edit it and do the proper grammar.
But what they do is almost like what I did with my book is you do it in, you get interviewed, and you talk about it, and then somebody articulates it, and you turn it around that way. And like Jonathan Quick did, too, in the Players Tribune, talking about snipers and stuff. And then you even see on his Twitter account, he thanks the guy who edited and put it together for him. Yeah, these guys, you know, I don't think they're literally sitting down, unless you're R.A. Dickey.
They're
maybe
not.
A guy like that would.
Well, and it's also, they're very well written.
Yes.
Right? I mean, not to take a shot at these pro athletes, but a lot of them,
like you said,
yeah, grade 10 education, and these guys are knocking out 5,000 words like
dude,
poetry.
You're a great broadcaster, but you couldn't write something good. Could you?
I don't know if I could.
Think he could.
I don't think I could write like, you know, some epic writer like Richard Griffin or anything like that. I got more than a grade 10.
I agree with that.
He's a college educator.
Well, I went
guy.
To college. I was technically enrolled in college.
You
I wouldn't
there.
Necessarily say I was on the dean's list.
Why don't you just tell the truth? You went there for 2 years and got kicked out, and you moved back in your parents' basement. That's what you did.
Well,
and you tell people you went to college.
Well, I did technically go. I was enrolled. I was there. Like, I was in school. I had a student number.
Taking what?
Doesn't matter.
You know what it is. It's the Bachelor of Arts. That's what it is.
Right.
Your
exactly.
Bachelor of Arts means that's it.
You're Rodney Dangerfield going back to school.
You show up every day. You are Rodney Dangerfield.
That's right. All right, Ray's on the phone. We got to tell him about what just happened here. Because we're live at a bar downtown.
Oh, yeah,
we're at the Jack Astors on John Street. And there's a bunch of people coming by. We're taking pics with people, shaking hands, kissing babies, the whole nine. It's great.
Yeah.
And we just had some guy come up to O-Dog and say, I chirped you so badly 5 years ago on Twitter that you blocked me. And he was asking for sympathy. And he wants to be unblocked.
Yeah.
And let's bring in Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Ray on Overdrive is a presentation of CRSO Joint Formula 14. Ray, once you've blocked some guy, would you ever unblock him?
They're off the island.
Me too.
There's no chance.
This guy's trying to tell me that he wants unblock. I can't even find him.
I wouldn't even. Not a chance. I just. Like, the chances are you block him because he swore at you, called you an a-hole or something, and you're like, forget it, beat it, scram.
Well, he was trying to make it like a PG-rated tweet.
He's half goon, by the way.
No, he's so oiled.
He's cooked.
He's going to the game tonight.
He's allowed to be. He's allowed to be.
That's
right.
Fine.
But he's like, dude, I was in high school, which makes it worse because you get those kids on Twitter.
Yeah.
They can absolutely destroy someone's life in 140 characters. And he may have just tuned you upside down.
But I give the kid full marks for coming down here and saying, I own it. I'd like to be unblocked because I'm a fan of the show. Maybe you give him a pass. That's the way I feel.
I sure. Fantastic. But no, not. First of all, I wouldn't even know how to unblock someone because you'd have to find out. Well, I guess he could tell you, but I wouldn't be going searching for it.
Well, maybe that's
it's not worth
step.
The effort. I mean, it's Twitter. If the guy tunes you up, I mean, like, forget it. Not a chance.
There are some rumors coming out of Montreal. This is a spicy meatball. P.K. Subban, his no-trade clause officially kicks in on July 1. So at that point, he will have all the cards in front of him. He can decide if he wants to stay a Montreal Canadian or if he ever wanted to leave. He could basically pick and choose where he wanted to go. And there are a couple of guys out of Montreal reputable guys, guys that cover the team that are saying, hey, they're hearing his name is out there.
Yeah.
And Bob McKenzie wrote about it today and said, listen, he'd be shocked if they at least didn't take into consideration their options here when it comes to PK and whether or not there would be a market out there. This happens to coincide with, I believe, Dreger last night on Insider Trading reporting that Therrien will get a vote of confidence and come back. Yeah. So you can imagine what the reaction is like out in Montreal. They'll just be going nuts. The idea of PK on the market and Therrien coming back.
Right.
But what do you make of that, Ray? Just the idea of PK's name even being out there in any capacity.
Well, Matt, it would be a hell of a blockbuster deal if he's involved in it. If you're, you know, who knows what the heck happened there this year? I mean, did anybody ever, Carey Price or not, see this coming? Like, I thought they were one of the, you know, albeit they had some holes in their lineup. Like, I didn't love their forward group. I didn't know if they were going to score enough. But it's like they imploded. And how many times is PK reportedly in the middle of whatever's going on there? Maybe it is to the point where they say, look, before I don't have any options, I'm going to look around and see what's there.
Well, I'll say this. If Therrien's coming back, and we know Carey Price will come back,
right?
I can't imagine nobody goes. Like, someone's going after a debacle like this.
Yeah.
Like, they're looking for blood in Montreal, and it's been an absolute joke of a season to the point where John Scott is playing. Like, John Scott's up playing, and they're like, yeah, we'll throw this guy a bone and maybe make it a story that people could appreciate.
Like, how did that even happen? Right? Like, how do you even get to that if you're Montreal? Like, you're just trying to salvage something out of your season so people think that you're a bunch of good guys, or, you know, I don't imagine they're going to, like, their center ice position, they're not coming back the same way. Like, there's going to be, there's no way they're coming back with Galchenyuk, Plekanec, and Desharnais in the middle of the ice. Like, something's going to change there. But to get to a player like Subban, now you're altering the course of your franchise right now. Well, and maybe that's what they did when they signed him. Right? Remember how contentious it was when they signed him.
Well, it was Molson that stepped in. Right? It was Molson that said that's
the fans
enough.
Too. They were going nuts.
Absolutely.
Brian.
Yeah,
and
but at some point there's, like, almost to what Ray's saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. Like, you got to figure out what the hell went on, not only on the ice but in that dressing room and the dynamic of that organization. And I have a hard time believing that Michel Therrien is just the whole reason that everything fell apart there. Like, to me, there's got to be some dysfunction in that room. And, you know, we in the media and the public and that maybe get about 8% of the truth of what goes on behind closed doors. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of there.
I think there's got to – I don't think anything's uncomplicated in Montreal. You know, like, I don't see that. I don't think there's an easy answer there, no matter where they turn to. But they don't have a lot of prospects that are, you know, around the corner to help turn it around. You know, they're going to get a higher draft pick, but they're stuck. Like, how do you get better in a hurry unless you feel like this year was just a complete out of the blue? Like, you know, a one in a million. Wow. We lost Carey Price. We lost Subban. Gallagher was hurt. Oh, my gosh, the team's going to be way better next year. But if they're not, and if you don't think that, how do you alter the team outside of, you know, moving some deck chairs around? And then you get into some of the big boys, and, I mean, let's face it, if Subban's name's out there, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be interested in listening anyway. Like, the first team I think of right away, you know, and I've been on a plane all day, so I don't know if anybody's poked any rumors together or anything, or if you've read anything, is Colorado. Like, that would be the first team that I would think of.
What about Toronto?
What are you getting back?
What about Edmonton?
Yeah, Edmonton came to mind immediately. Montreal trading PK to Toronto. I'm not sure they could survive that PR disaster.
You're right. That was a stupid comment.
But that, this is the multi-layers of a move like this. If it ever got to a point, like this would really prove how much autonomy Mark Bergevin actually has. Because GMs always try to tell that, no, I got autonomy. Yeah, when I agree to the deal, I got autonomy. Okay. Well, how'd that work out when you were trying to push for a bridge deal originally with PK and Jeff Molson showed up and said, stop screwing around, pay him.
Right.
And how about you want to talk about it being even more complicated? How about trying to be Mark Bergevin going to Jeff Molson and saying, you know that guy that literally every fan loves and he sells more jerseys than everyone else?
Yeah.
And he's the most entertaining player in the league.
Well, get the cops ready on the streets if you move them, because they're going to go nuts.
They'd go nuts, and I think that's what makes it – that would be even more complicated is how do you sell it, Ray, to the owner and to the fans, the idea of even thinking about trading a guy like PK Subban?
It depends who you get back. Like, if you have a deal with – that involves Matt Duchene or Taylor Hall – right, like are you, you know, you, people will be upset. But if you think the deal, you know, the fans there are, I don't know, I think they would see if they think the deal works, then I think you're okay. If you get fleeced on it, in their opinion, then you got a real problem.
He's such a fan favorite, though. Like, he's the definition of a fan favorite.
You're right, but you know what? The thing is he also has to, you know, back it up with good play. I think he had a good season this year, but I'm thinking, you know, to Ray's point, if they trade him for Nail Yakupov, which would never happen, but the fans will riot. But if they find, you know, that number one centerman, if they don't believe Galchenyuk's that, or if it's Taylor Hall, who's arguably one of the best left wingers in the game, or Matt Duchene, who, you know, that relationship could be strained in Colorado, you could, if you're analytical, or even if you have a sense of, like, you know,
objectivity. Good luck. Have you been to Montreal?
I've been to Montreal.
It's not even close to being that case with that trade.
If you're managing the team for your fans, you have no chance.
Yeah.
What about your owner?
Aside from you one time, Hayes, thinking that they should be the general manager of the team.
Right.
I know that was in soccer. It was a different league and all that.
Oh, it was MLS.
Yeah, I know, but I'm still making the same analogy. You want the fans to make the moves.
Right.
Your team would be in last place.
Guess what, Ray? They are anyway.
Your ballot box?
Hey, Ray, guess what? They are anyway. Have you been to Toronto?
Who's in last place?
The Leafs.
Right.
So if I was managing them, they'd still be in last place. Wouldn't be any different.
I can't even imagine what they would be like if you were managing them. It would be a tire fire.
Yeah.
It would be last year again and again and again.
Well,
if all of us were, it would be like that. If we were managing we had our ballot box open to all the fans, you had to manage to all the fans, to Leafs Nation or to Montreal's fan base. If you had to manage, okay, the 57% say we should move PK, we better move him or keep him. You can't do that.
No, it would be a gong show, but the owner is a fan. The owner is a fan. And that's what really makes it complicated. I'm not saying that Bergevin's going to be listening to call-in shows on TSN radio in Montreal. He's not tuning into Mitch Melnick and saying, I wonder what his listeners think about this idea. But he's got to send it up the chain. And that's what really makes it interesting. This isn't a board that looks at every player just simply as a number. Jeff Molson clearly has a real connection to PK Subban.
Well, I mean, from his donation off the ice, which is astounding and admirable, for the ways in he interacts with the fans, you're right. There's some intangibles that PK has that other players just don't have. But if that locker room is fragmented, which every now and then you hear about it, or you hear allegations of it, then you really got to look at things. Because you can't overcome that, and you can't trade everybody. If you can fix it, fix it. But you better not get fleeced on a player like Subban, because you don't have very many chips like that. You just don't. You never really do. When are you going to move a player of that stature? You better do well on the deal if you're going to do it.
That's a career defining deal.
And also, though, Ray, you have to do it. If you believe you have to do it sooner than later because the no movement clause kicks in this July 1st.
Well, and that's why all these, you know, if there's ever a big move, right, it generally seems to be in concert with the draft where you've got, you know, picks you can move around. But this isn't a picks deal. You know, I mean, what's PK's cap hit? $8 million or
$9
million? Well, this is not a cap hit, or this is not a picks deal. This has got players and dollars and, you know, significant players involved. You don't need four bit players for PK Subban. You need something significant if that deal is being bandied about.
With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, Jonathan Bernier played really well again last night. He's been very good for about a month and a half. He won't start tomorrow night. Garrett Sparks is in there because we know what's going on here. They want to make sure they control their destiny and have the best opportunity at 30th pick, or 30th place, I should say.
Just think of what that says to both Sparks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Sparks, you're up, buddy, because we believe you're going to give us a great opportunity to lose tonight. It's such a warped mentality.
It is.
But Bernier, you know, we were discussing where he stands with Babcock and how he fits into the summer plans and fits into where their mentality will be at next September. He's had such a roller coaster year. Do you put any stock into the past 6 weeks, or was it such a disaster the first 3 or 4 months that it's too hard to overlook that?
No, I think you have to look at the entire picture for sure. And the reason I say that is his career numbers are nowhere near what that first, I don't know, was it half of the year looked like? I mean, that was a train wreck for him. He couldn't stop anything. He's better than that. And the tail end of the year, I think his save percentage was up close to .940. From the 1st of March or just the tail end of February on. And that's a little high. So you have to balance which you believe in. You know, I from a different sport, Jay Happ's back with the Blue Jays. Was he the pitcher that was in the first half of the year, or is he the guy that turned it around, they said, when he went to Pittsburgh and was, I don't know, 7-1? Like, they believe it was the latter. And in Toronto, it's what their evaluation of that is, plus what market there might be for him if you were to move him. Like, how many goalie spots are really open for a guy making $4.5 million?
Not many. Actually, if you're looking at depth charts, I mean, Calgary has a spot open. I think that at least Yoni Ortiz has pushed himself into at least getting he's an RFA. I would think that they would give him a contract. So there's a spot open in Calgary, and there's a spot open with Eddie Lack in Carolina. Outside of that, I don't see any other teams that are dying for, you know, a guy that can give you half the games.
And if you're Calgary, I mean, are you not trying to look at? I mean, first you would try to look at a deal for Frederick Anderson before a deal for Jonathan Bernier, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest question mark with Anderson being injured right now, so John Gibson's going to get the reins in Anaheim. And he probably would have anyways, but Frederick Anderson would be number one on my chart if I was Calgary. And then, you know, you start to look at maybe bridge guys like Brian Elliott, you know, who's 30 years old, he's shown that he can be a good 1A, kind of a short-term starter, not a full-time starter. You know, guys like that. But, Bernier would be far down on that list as far as, hey, we need a guy at 4-plus who can give you 40 games and you're not sure of the quality of play.
And that may that sort of thought from around the league might tip things to, you know what, we're not going to get anything for him. We don't have anything else. Like, they don't have anybody else. There's the other thing. You know, I think Garrett Sparks has shown that he needs, you know, at best more time in the American League. Then who else do you have? Nobody.
Yeah.
No, it's the most obvious position of need, and I don't think there's any doubt Lou will be kicking tires on Anderson and others. We got to fly, buddy. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Masters, and try to keep your dukes up when Cammy comes at you on Sunday.
Yeah, I got to say, I I did almost miss a couple of questions here. I'm parked right in front of the TV anyway, so there won't be too much movement this weekend, that's for sure.
All right, enjoy it, man. We'll do it Monday.
Take care, boys. Later.
Ray Ferraro on Overdrive was a presentation of Cierzo Joint Formula 14.
Your boy Jordan Spieth got an eagle putt on 15 to get back to 7 under par. Just hit a 2 hybrid from 245 to about 30 feet.
That's not a bad shot.
Not a bad shot.
Not a bad shot.
I'm reading a story about the NBA's Nerlens Noel.
Yeah, Nerlens Noel.
Sued because he was the worst renter ever. Apparently weed, Gatorade stains, and he death threatened the people who tried to charge him for that. Of course, it's on TMZ Sports, so I don't know where.
That means it's 100% legit,
it must
man.
Be true. It's
100%
in the paper.
Legit. Yeah, he's down in Philly. That 76ers team is the biggest disaster in pro sports. We didn't get into that yesterday. Sam Hinkie, their GM, who walked away from the gig a couple days ago, and he penned a 13-page essay on why he was leaving and why it was the right time for him to leave. Like, you talk about, I started reading it, I got through 2 pages, and I'm like, what the hell am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
Like, you talk about a needy, just self-indulgement, indulging moment. Like,
what, for him leaving?
Yeah, well, no, just resign. Like, don't write a 13-page essay.
Saying what, how good he was and how things just didn't work out around him?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you're talking, it's like the needy boyfriend who's like, I don't know, like, I still love you, but I don't know. It's like, dude, just go in there, man up, and say I'm out.
Just say, I was a major part of this disaster, and I can't do it anymore, and I'm out.
Right. Yeah. And instead, a 13-page diatribe quoting like Abraham Lincoln and all these different people.
No wonder
people.
I mean, they're a disaster anyways, but why would, you know, this guy's a drag bunt right at the top.
Oh, the biggest of all, the Ichiro of drag
Starting at
bunts.
The suit and crackers and ends at the pasta.
The full nine. Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star will join us around the table. We'll hit some opening night prop bets. Stroman on the mound tonight. Donaldson will play. He's going to DH tonight. And we'll get Griff's thoughts on a number of things.
And we got to double down on the fings.
We got to get some more fingers out here, yeah. We're live with the Jack Astors on John Street. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog. Your drive home just got a lot more fun on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
We are live from the Jack Astors on John. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, and Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star.
What is it, 44 straight years, shirt and tie opening day, Griff?
44 years of Major League Baseball opening days between the Expos and the Blue Jays, and the last 40, only the last 40 with shirt, tie, and jacket.
So after today, it's just on the in the closet and gone for the year.
Well, I think the first game of the playoffs last year, I wheeled it out again. But
that's what I love, man. You go on like SportsCenter, and you'll have Dutchie out there decked out in a suit. Maybe Scotty Mac will be in a suit, and then Griff will be there in like just a bar shirt. He looks like Ed Belfour on the field. It's outstanding.
Griff, I wanted to ask you something. We talked to Dirk Hayhurst last week, and he kind of said that Marcus Stroman was basically like the face of the franchise right now. And I know Alex Anthopoulos talked last year that he learned a lot about analytics and mixing that with leadership. In that locker room, is there like one guy that's the kind of alpha dog, the leader, or do they kind of do it by committee? Because I know there's a lot of strong personalities, some veteran, good baseball people in there, but is there one leader in that locker room?
Well, I think that the guy who quietly is emerging as such is Troy Tulowitzki. I mean, he doesn't say a lot, and when you watch him on TV, when you watch him in the dugout, he's never smiling, but he's always talking. He's always talking to somebody. He's always talking to a coach. He's always talking to the next hitter when he comes back if he's made an out. And to me, that's the guy that even the young guys who like to have fun, like Stroman and those guys who like to show their personalities, I think they look at that and they defer to that leadership. And Josh Donaldson is more of an internal guy. Tulowitzki is internal, he's serious, but he goes outside himself to talk to other players at the same time, and I think that's the leadership that they were looking for.
Is Stroman the face of this team?
Stroman is the face of this team within the fan base, because they're trying to, and they're not only trying, they've gone to a much younger demographic than baseball is used to. And you look at the All-Star game last year, and there are so many young stars 27 and under, and the Jays have a bunch of those. And young fans travel with the Jays on the road. It's amazing. I was talking to Drew Storen yesterday about him looking forward to this home opener. And he said he was already impressed with the number of fans that travel with the team in that one series that they played in Tampa. And during the season, there's not a team in baseball that travels as well, travels as many fans. And
is that right, huh?
The demographic has gotten much younger since the 90s, since that generation of winning teams. And they used to go to the hotels, that generation, just hang around looking for players to come out. This generation of traveling fans goes to party. And they take over a ballpark. They take over a city. And
I love
great.
It. I so love it. Yeah, no, and listen, Marcus Stroman, the guy, this is a guy who hasn't pitched a full season yet as a Blue Jay. And the fact that he's even in the conversation says a lot about his personality, says a lot about the success story he's already been. I think the determination he showed last year when he got injured and he came back and then made an impact in September, I still can't believe he's done that. But he also wrote that piece in the Players Tribune today. And I think this is a beautiful PR move from his standpoint. And it's going to help the Blue Jays too, because he is feeding the beast that is our inferiority complex when it comes to American athletes and whether or not they really like it here, whether or not they want to be in Toronto. This guy reps Toronto more than Drake, more than John Torrey. Like, all he's talking about, all he's tweeting about, Instagram, all that kind of stuff is Toronto, Toronto, Toronto. And I think that's brilliant from his standpoint, and I think it factors into his popularity.
And I think everybody at this table understands the inferiority complex that Canadian fans, that Canadians in general, have about their country. And you're right, Brian, for a guy to come in and do that, and anybody who hasn't been on it should Google
the Players Tribune
and, yep. and read it, because it is, as you said, a great PR move for himself, a great PR move for the ball club, and a great PR move for the Blue Jays across the country.
Is there ever a line, we were talking about last hour, where, you know, it's a PR move, he backs it up with great play. Is there ever a line you would feel from a media outlet that, you know, he's gone too much, you know, it's over the top and not worrying about his play?
Well, I think for a starting pitcher, it's much easier because he's going once every 5 days.
Right.
If he had to do that every day, there's no way that he could expend that energy on a daily basis. But once every 5 days, and the key is, I mean, you can see athletes who are phonies and athletes who are originals.
Right.
And that personality never changes, and he doesn't direct any animosity towards media that comes into the clubhouse. He's playing with a chip on his shoulder, and he admits it, and he describes it. And he describes the size of it and that yeah. it'll never go away. And that's who he is. And that's what he uses to generate the performances that he does.
We're live at the Jack Astors on John ahead of the home opener tonight. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, and Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star around the table.
You just mentioned he goes every 5 days. Can you give me, like, any information on what a pitcher does on the road for those in-between days? I just want to know how much I hate my dad for not making me a pitcher, because, I mean, are they golfing every day? Are they, what kind of lifestyle are these pitchers leading? Because I want to know.
Well, if you were an Atlanta Braves pitcher in the
they 90s, were playing some
they were
golf.
Playing were golf. Yeah, they were all down to like
Maddox
three
and
handicaps
Smoltz. They were always teeing it up.
Yeah, and what the pitchers today, they still show up at the ballpark at 2:30 for a 7 o'clock game. But there's an awful lot of card games going on, you know. they go there because all their friends are there, and that's a sign of a good clubhouse. When you go in a baseball clubhouse that's losing, that's on a losing streak,
nobody's
later
there.
In the season in August, the dog days when you know you haven't got a chance, we'll go in there as media at 3:30, 3.5 hours before a game. You could fire a cannon through there and not hit anything. But by and large, this team last season and this season, even the pitchers, the starting pitchers are in there. Relief pitchers are in there. There's not very many cliques in this group. And, you know, like you, I wish I'd been a starting pitcher growing up.
Oh, dude. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. And that's the life. And, you know, they do their work in between. They throw long toss. They keep their arm loose. And then they throw a bullpen 2 days before. Throw a bullpen 2 days before they start. The rest of the time, they're cheerleaders. You watch Stroman; he's sitting on the on the field just outside the dugout, throwing seeds in his mouth and criticizing.
They're living life. Man.
Oh yeah,
they're living life. Josh Donaldson will play tonight. He's going to DH though. This feels kind of like the conversation we had last year early in the season when Bautista got banged up and there was a lot of debate. Should he be playing? Should they just shut him down? And he kept playing through it, and he began to DH and then eventually got back out there into right field. Gibbons came out immediately. So did Donaldson a couple of nights ago and said they don't think it's serious. He's never been on the DL. All he does is play. I mean, he's missed four games a year for the past 3 years. But are they forcing this a little bit? I mean, if it's to the point where he can't play third base and he's got a hit, and I know they've got the – they've got the dirt in the infield, but it's still not the greatest ballpark in the world to be running on. What do you make of Donaldson even playing tonight?
Well, I think it's less of a comparison to last year with Bautista than it is to 2 years ago with Jose Reyes coming out of Montreal, and then they went down to Tampa for more artificial turf, and then come back here for more artificial turf. And I think that's the danger. I think that should be the last time that they open the season in Tampa, because they're not going to give up the revenue they're getting out of those Montreal exhibition games. Those two games pays for a large part of spring training and the seeds that Stroman is popping in front of the dugout.
Right.
So it's more of that issue. It's more of resting that calf muscle that has had to endure 2-6. Now it'll be 12 games on artificial turf before he gets back onto grass. And I think that it was a smart move making him the DH for tonight, although it was my suggestion yesterday to Gibby. I said, Gibby, why don't you make him DH and put Edwin at first? And he said, that's a pretty good idea. So I'll take credit for that.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice. Nicely done.
But,
well,
yeah, I think it is a danger, but this guy's a gamer. He's only missed four games each of the last three seasons, and in this day and age, there's no more Cal Ripkins. That's about as good as you're going to get.
With Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star, we're live with the Jack Astors on Drawn. Ahead of the home opener tonight, Stroman on the mound, Jays taking on the Red Sox. That dirt infield, how big of a difference is it really going to make?
Well, aesthetically, I loved it. I went there last night for the workout, and it just jumped out at you. It's such a difference in terms of watching a game. It felt like the field was moving closer to the stands, and that's just me. I've seen so many games. I felt like I could smell the grass, even though it was still artificial turf. I mean, it just changes the whole feel inside that ballpark. And the players went out there. Donaldson didn't take any ground balls, so it'll take a while. But I think that same home field advantage that the Jays had last season when they played with the slower turf, Baltimore came in, couldn't handle it. Buck Showalter wanted to take his team home before the final game, before the second game. I think this will have the same feel, because the more the Jays play on it, the more used to the surface they'll get, and every new team that comes in will struggle the first time they come in. It's a huge advantage for the Jays.
I think David Price got pushed back to Monday, did he not?
Yeah, he's not pitching this weekend.
Rain out, and then they pushed everybody back. I mean, he could have pitched because it's still his fifth day, but they pushed him back.
What kind of reception do you think once he pitch? I mean, is it just going to be, oh, he got the money, just leave him alone? I don't feel there's really a whole lot of animosity towards him.
Well, the introductions tonight will be interesting when they line up on the first baseline and then they introduce David Price. I agree with you. I mean, would fans rather have not had those 2 months just because he didn't re-sign? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah.
Would you rather not have had David Price's presence here to lead that way while Marcus Stroman was out? But I do believe he'll get booed a little bit from the – he'll get a mix of it. We see that a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it's a standard thing.
Yeah. Guys will get – I mean, they'll get gooned up tonight, and it's it's a part of –
They already are.
They already are, and it's a part of the program, right?
Yeah, by 7 o'clock, the whole – that center field section where they're serving beer, and now they have organic beer.
So, oh, is that right?
I don't know what difference that'll make to their –
I don't
level
think
of sobriety.
It's when you throw up that the plants grow a little bit better. That's what it is.
Exactly.
Know?
It helps the environment when you throw up all over the place. I think with Price, I think if you're going to boo someone, boo Rogers, boo the owners. They were the one that they weren't even going to jump into the pool. They had no interest in paying them anyway. They weren't even going to talk about it. So it's not like equal deals were on the table and he decided, no, I'm going to go to Fenway anyway. It wasn't his fault. He never had the option to come home.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. I mean, when they picked him up and when they changed presidents and GMs, it was never in the cards that they spend that money to re-sign him, because in a couple of years they're going to have five guys earning $20 million or more, and they didn't want to have that commitment moving forward as far as it was with David Price.
With Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star, you talked about those two games in Montreal and how much that's worth to the team and how it can kind of pay for a large portion of spring training. We were talking yesterday about all the bat flip posters that are all over the Rogers Center, inside, outside. It's Bautista, Game 7, hitting that home run. They're trying to capitalize on that moment. And I understand why they would. I mean, it's the most talked about home run in decades, you could argue, and it lasted all offseason because the commissioner got involved. Crazy Goose Gossage started tuning up, Bautista and others. I mean, everyone got involved, the old school crowd. How much do you think that moment and that image really is worth to the Blue Jays?
Well, it was worth a lot to the Blue Jays because, as we were talking about earlier, it appeals to the younger generation of fans. It appeals to fans who love the show of today's young athletes. And even though Bautista is not a young athlete, he's one of the faces of that franchise. And that home run, as you pointed out, was probably the biggest one since Joe Carter's home run. And his reaction, I believe, was spontaneous. I think it was worth a huge amount of money to the Blue Jays. But on the other hand, it made Jose Bautista feel like he deserved what he was asking for. And if it was 5 years and $150 million, that was part of the bat flip and how he feels he has contributed and been underpaid for the last 5 years. So it balances out.
That's an interesting angle. Like, you monetize that image, and it's all over the Rogers
Center. He's like, I want a piece of this pie.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's sitting there saying, hey, I hit the home run, right? It wasn't Mark Shapiro that hit it.
I'll start a T-shirt company then.
He might, man.
And he is.
But then the Jays will say, we got it. You can't do that.
Well, it's owned by MLB, I guess. It's owned by the Blue Jays, the moment.
Right, and he's so savvy that he understood the moment, and he understood the last 2 months plus October of the Blue Jays season and what it meant to ownership. And when he came out for that first day on the Monday in spring training and said, there's no negotiations, they have my number, and he was able to recite what Roger's stock was worth before and after the Blue Jays drive. This guy's savvy. This guy knows what he's doing. So you know he's including that home run in his negotiation.
How much of a hard line? Like, I always wondered, being an athlete, if I said I don't want to negotiate during the season, and my general manager picked up the phone and called me or Jamie kind of at Christmas time and said, we're thinking about this, and if the numbers blow you away, you're going to say, I kind of like that. Mid-season or not, I know what I said. Where do you think these guys stand on their hard line and not negotiating during the season, Rich?
Well, Encarnacion for sure, because the last time he signed an extension, it was during the season, and he told his agent that he didn't want to do it once the season started on opening day.
Right.
But and there is negotiation to be done with Edwin. But in terms of Bautista, it's not a negotiation if they called him up and said, okay, Jose, we'll give you that number. That's not a negotiation. That's okay. That's
answering demands.
That's answering a phone call. That's answering a phone call. That's what that is. And so when he says no negotiation, they have my number. If they were to call him today and give him that number, because he knows he's not going to get that number from any other team, he knows his value to the Blue Jays has been part of what he's asking for in the future. And that doesn't carry over to any negotiation with the Red Sox, Yankees, or any other team, because they don't care what he did or that he flipped the bat. They care about what he's going to do for the next 4 years or five years with their team.
Well, and Mark Shapiro said recently, you know, having success this year would be a lot, makes it a lot more likely or easier potentially to sell ownership on giving the money to Edwin and Bautista. I mean,
well, that's the easiest thing.
It's a great cop
for the president
it?
To say. That's the easiest. Winning will make it easier for us to sign that. Well,
kidding.
Percentages go from what, 0 to 5%, and the guy still refuses your offer. It's the easiest thing for a president to say, and he almost has to say it moving forward with a fan base that thinks that they can afford these moves, and why aren't you doing it now? And so he's sort of got a carrot on a stick that he's dangling in front of the fan base. And when that moment comes, he'll take care of it however he wants to take care of it. And you can always place the blame on a player for not accepting what a fabulous offer you laid out on the table for him. Right.
With Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star. So you mentioned off the top, you've been to 44 home openers. What defines a home opener for you?
Shirt and tie.
Yeah, I guess so. Being all spiced up,
shirt
man.
Shirt and tie.
Going VIP.
And to me, it's all the BS that you wrote or talked about as a PR guy in Montreal that you put out there during the spring comes home to roost. Either it's true or it's not, and you can see it pretty quickly going into a season whether you've got what you thought you had or you don't. And spring training, I mean, these guys don't make road trips, and even though it's technically the Blue Jays against the Red Sox, you're not seeing these guys. And pitchers come in, young pitchers come in the sixth, seventh inning, and they're facing AAA guys, same guys they faced last year. You don't know. You don't know anything until opening day, and that's what that means to me.
It's the real go time now. Well, we really appreciate you popping by here, and grab yourself some pints, some wings. Well, I guess you're working, so maybe water and wings.
Water and wings.
There
yeah.
you go, man.
Then I'll
That'll
go
work.
Jump in the pool.
Yeah, yeah, you do whatever you got to do, man.
All right, man.
We appreciate you popping by.
All right, anytime.
There
Thanks,
he
guys.
Is. One of our favorites, Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star, joining us here at the Jack Astors on John. Ahead of the game tonight, the home opener with the Red Sox in town. We're here until 7 p.m. We still got to get to some prop bets for the home opener. We got the future headlines to get to. Steve Phillips will join us in the 6 p.m. hour. Get back into the Maple Leaf game, the PK rumors. I mean, there's a lot of things to touch on this afternoon. We're live from the Jack Astors on John. We're here until 7. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog. Your drive home just got a lot more fun on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
We're live from the Jack Astors on John ahead of the home opener tonight. Steve Phillips will join us in about a half an hour. We'll get to future headlines in the 6 p.m. hour, a couple of opening night prop bets as well. We're tracking the Masters. Jordan Spieth remains in the lead. Rory McIlroy's making a bit of a push here. It's distracting being down here because the Masters is up. There are other ball games on.
Girls everywhere.
There's girls everywhere. There's
guys
people having
up,
fun.
Chatting, yucking it up. I love it. This is how it should be. This is how every Friday afternoon should be on Overdrive.
I think we can try to make that work.
And then that way you don't call it like mail it in Friday or whatever. You just
Oh, today is mail it in Friday.
Yeah, but you
There's
call
no
it
doubt.
Patio Friday. Imagine us mid-May, patio. Now pints are afterwards, but you enjoy yourself. Food, good company.
Right. We got to be professional here. Pints are afterwards, but yeah. That's the one bummer about tonight, but I always expect it. Like, this is something that defines opening night in Toronto for me. It's always cold. It feels like every year when they come home for the first night, the dome is, like, it's a lock to be closed. Well, the first home opener they ever had back in 1977 at the X, it was snowing.
Yeah, you can't have that.
It was, like, a snowstorm. And you talk about introducing yourself to, like, some guy is down in Atlanta, Georgia, watching a ball game, and he's like, who are these
people? Yeah, what the hell is going on up there?
What is Major League Baseball thinking?
That feeds the stereotype.
Well,
that's
and
what
that's what drives me nuts. You go to New York, it's just as bad. You go to Boston, it's bad. You go to Detroit, it's bad. Minnesota, it's bad. I mean, we're all kind of in the same ballpark here,
right?
To use a horrible pun. But, yeah, it would be great if it was like 20 degrees out tonight, the dome was open, but that place is going to be so loud. And, again, we've had so many people pop into the John Street Jack Astor saying, yeah, I'm going, man, and I've been fired up for weeks about this. We had a guy who just said he splits season tickets with, like, three or four other people, and somehow he got lucky enough to get these tickets.
Well, he's a good Edmonton boy, too, and he said, he goes, he split it, and they basically were going to do a pool for the free tickets, or not for the free tickets, for the opening tickets. And what does he do? They gave them to him. He said, just go. So him and his buddies are heading down. Pretty exciting.
This would be an absolute brawl. If I was splitting tickets with, like, three of my buddies.
Would you want to go to that many games, though? Like, the production, you live 45 minutes away with no traffic, right?
Yeah, give or take.
You would do that? Would you come 25 times?
Well, I don't know if I'd want to go to 20. This year, I probably would. Like, if you asked me 5 years ago when they were a 500 ball club, would I want to go to 25 games? Not a chance I would have done that. But this year, like, I'll try to go to 5 or 7 games in September if they're in the mix, if not more than that, right? I'll go to every playoff game if they're playing,
yeah,
right? But that's what it comes down to. It's no different than the Maple Leafs, right? We just had this conversation earlier in the week. You couldn't pay me to go see that game on Wednesday or Tuesday night, whatever
it was. Not even close, man.
With Columbus in town, no dice. Not happening.
Wow.
But,
I mean,
like, there are some grinders, man. Like, Jays fans, they go to 81 home games. And they sit there and they keep score and they eat their peanuts and I don't know what the hell they do with themselves.
What do you think you put on in a season if you go to 81?
Oh, I think 81 pounds.
A pound a day? A pound a game?
I think a pound a game if you're up in the seats.
Dude, you would have to start bringing your own food, like just carrots and celery so you wouldn't balloon.
You'd be Jonas. Yeah. You'd have to be Jonas.
Yeah, you need rabbit food up there. I don't think there's any doubt.
Well, I don't even know if that's possible at a ballpark.
Well,
how would you like
allow
to be?
You to do it.
How would you like to be? In the break of last hour, the gentleman from Colorado who came up and says, I do every park over the last 10 years. And he said, I try and do a hockey game as well. Did the Wednesday Columbus game. and then slide into this.
He drove all the way up here from Colorado to go see Maple Leafs Blue Jackets on Wednesday night. You talk about reimbursement. He should go back across the border, and the border agent should say, here's $200 from Brendan Shanahan. He left this here for you. Final hour up next. We're live with the Jack Astors on John. We'll get to future headlines, prop bets. We're tracking the Masters, and we're teeing up the game tonight. Blue Jays back home taking on Boston. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.